Okay. Gray's motivational theory. Your sympathetic nervous system, that is your stress response system, has an inhibition component that develops earliest evolutionarily, and serotonin is the foundation of that. If you don't have a good serotonin system, you don't deal with stress. And that's primarily the sympathetic system in snakes and amphibians. You have an activation system on the left, which is your system using dopamine that helps you get the things that make you feel good. As you can see, SRIs and tricyclics primarily work on the inhibition system. And dopamine, we don't have too many things that work on dopamine in psychiatry. MAOIs, stimulants, bupropion a little bit. This system burns energy and causes inflammation throughout the body. The sympathetic system is counterbalanced by the parasympathetic system, which not only regulates things through the body, but regulates your emotions and your social bonding behaviors. And the vagus, the 10th cranial nerve, is the heart of that. And the balance between sympathetic and parasympathetic determines your behaviors, emotions, and thoughts. And the problem is, the way we live, our sympathetic system is typically in overdrive, and the parasympathetic system is underfunctioning. So breathing is the one way you can voluntarily change that ratio of sympathetic to parasympathetic. And it was known years ago, and you can experiment with it at home, different breathing patterns will change your emotions. Every emotion has a different breathing pattern, as well as changes in musculature, especially in the face. And this is one of the best studies on this, in fact, done with college students and disguised. So the vagus is crucial for all social bonding. It is crucial for empathy and love. And the better your vagus tone is, you are better able to empathize. And this is true down in children in grade school. Girls start out being, on average, a lot better than boys. But guys, you can learn. Okay? And it is the source of your gut feelings and instincts. And it determines how the mind organizes the information from the outside world. This is a simplified wiring diagram. 20% of the vagus is the output to the organs and the glands in the body to maintain health. 80% is information from your guts to the brain. Two nodes in the brainstem, one that affects perception of pain, the other that determines aggression levels. And a pathway through the thalamus that determines how the cortex organizes things. And a pathway through the limbic system, including the amygdala, the hippocampus, the hypothalamus. Who remembers what the hypothalamus does? I have to quiz you when we do neuroanatomy. What does the hypothalamus do? Does a lot. It takes care of the four Fs: feeding, fight, flight, and mating. I see you took your rhodiola today. Okay. So, one simple, dirty way of looking at the activity of the parasympathetic system is what is the variability in heart rate? Okay. So, according to medical textbooks, healthy, normal people breathe approximately 15 to 18 breaths per minute. You see in the upper right plot the pulse of this 50-year-old, he is a yoga instructor, the pulse of this man. Now you see there's a 4-beat difference in heart rate between breathing in and breathing out at this speed of breathing. He speeds his breathing up in the bottom right box to 30 breaths per minute, which kind of maximally stimulates your sympathetic system. There's now a 3-beat difference between breathing in and breathing out. In other words, at normal healthy breathing, you're close to maximally sympathetic stimulated. In the bottom left box, he slows his breathing down to 7.5 breaths, and you see this nice sine wave appear. And there's now an 11-beat difference between breathing in and breathing out. And this looks like about a 12-year-old boy, and he's 50 at the time this was done. Then he slows his breath to 5 breaths per minute, and you see this amazing sine wave, and there's a 34-beat difference between breathing in and breathing out. This looks like a happy, healthy 2-year-old baby. This is the verse from the Tao Te Ching on breathing. It starts with this sentence: the purpose of the breathing practices is to induce the tenderness of a newborn baby. And the capillaries and arteries become much more flexible and pulse in a much bigger excursion doing this breathing. So I will take you on a whirlwind tour through some of our studies, not all of them, nor our charitable projects here, mostly. GAD, schizophrenia, inflammatory bowel, severe Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, Southeast Asian tsunami survivors, Australian Vietnam veterans disabled for 30 years on disability when I went there, 9/11 World Trade Center, we've done so many 9/11 responders, healthcare providers in Mississippi, and survivors of torture and sexual trafficking for 10 to 20 years in Africa. So Teresa DeSillo is a colleague, a social worker, amazing traumatologist, went to India and collaborated with us and people at the equivalent of NIMH in India after the 2004 tsunami. 9 months after the tsunami, refugees from the worst hit part of India in a small spit of land that sticks out, 6,000 people died in minutes in that small area from the tsunami. And we had 183 subjects, three groups assigned by camps, five refugee camps. They could not be randomized within the camp because if you give something to one person in a camp and not to others, there's a riot. So the five camps were randomized to get the program. And this was a program done by the International Association of Human Values. I used to teach for them all over the world, very sophisticated yoga breathing. They got 8 hours over 4 days. And there was also a group that got the breathing with a CBT exposure, a form called traumatic incident reduction that Teresa's used for years at her clinic in Miami, with 35,000 outpatient visits a year of severe PTSD. And there was a 6-week waitlist control group. And you see the control group in green did not change over 6 weeks. The breathing group went into remission on their PTSD scale after 4 days. And the exposure group, it was a little hard to do them in the refugee camps, but we got them better at about 6 weeks. We got half of them after a week. And basically, the breathing was so powerful, you could not measure a further effect from the CBT exposure, although the client said that they thought it was helpful. And you see, they stayed better after 6 months, even though most of them weren't doing the breathing. And this is their Beck depression score. Their scores were much better than your scores would be if we measured them after this 4-day treatment. Unheard of, but we're used to seeing it. I went to Australia working with Janice Carter, who is not only a psychiatrist but a yoga teacher of many years, wanted to get her PhD. Her whole career has been working with veterans with PTSD, and I worked with her worst veterans. They were randomized to get breathing or waitlist, and these are simple plots. Again, we could show a lot more data, but you see the group on the left is the first group I did. I taught a yoga teacher from the foundation there because it's based in 153 countries to teach veterans. It's different teaching 60-year-old chain-smoking, meat-eating guys yoga as opposed to 30-year-old women. And you can see that there's a dramatic drop over 5 weeks in the plot on the left and further improvements. The black line is the average of the group. I like to see individual scores, okay? As soon as they would hear information from Iraq and Afghanistan about friends, they would typically relapse and drink a lot more. The waitlist control group, you see the first 6 weeks, they have no change, and then they have a dramatic change. The group I got, even though it was randomized, there were about 15 people in it, so it was kind of, we would have liked to have more. But the problem is all of them were so ill, they'd been abandoned by their families for many years, and they also had no jobs. Whereas the second group, just by chance, most of them were working and had families, and a bunch of that second group actually became teachers to go through Australia and teach this to veterans. We changed our program over the years. We got away from using hardly any rapid breathing because it can trigger panic attacks or anxiety. It can trigger flashbacks. It can rarely trigger seizures. It can be difficult for patients with COPD or asthma, which is very common in veterans, commonly chain smokers. It can increase blood pressure, and it can trigger mania if people do more than a little bit of it. And we don't know whether it's safe in pregnancy. It's generally, even in India, where they don't do controlled studies on these things, they do not do it in pregnancy. Typically, we've moved to using an ancient Qigong breathing described 3,000 years ago, which two modern research groups, one in Italy, one in New Jersey, knowing nothing about ancient breathing, making people breathe in all possible rhythms, discovered everything you can measure in the mind and the body is perfect at this rhythm. It's around 5 to 6 breaths per minute, sometimes going down to about 3, 3.5. Equal inhale and exhale. And there are further elaborations on this. The method I use was developed by Russian Orthodox monks and is most sophisticated, and it's taught to Russian special forces and Olympic athletes. And there are other kinds of breathing we use. Our trials in 9/11 responders, these are open series. These are people who, this is typically 9 years after 9/11, and these people had been through years of the best treatment at the best medical centers in New York and no benefits and dramatic improvements within 2 days. Okay? Putting people into remission on multiple inventories. The group we're collaborating with on this is in Toronto. They are experts on severe anxiety, comorbid disorders. This is the second group. 27, these patients are embedded in a larger group, which also had many women with sexual trauma, PTSD, and severe multiple comorbid disorders, years of treatment, including CBT with exposure and mindfulness-based CBT and medications and medication combinations. Dramatic improvements after 2 days. And we've worked a lot with survivors of mass disasters. And we want to make it so it just takes a few teachers to have hundreds of people. Simple techniques, easy to learn, easy to teach. Rapid relief, safe for everybody, no matter what their background or age is, and can be done in translation in numerous cultures, requires no equipment or even any electricity, which is important after disasters. And you can easily train people in a short time. One of our studies was done in Mississippi. Chris Streeter at BU did an independent assessment of this. So this is the oil spill. And we had 153 providers, more social workers than any other. And Mississippi not only had two hurricanes and then the BP oil spill, but they had floods and tornadoes. And their healthcare system is generally ranked 49th or 50th in the 50 states. And their therapists were overwhelmed. They were getting their own PTSD from seeing so many patients with PTSD. And we did a 3-day train-the-trainer program in 3 different places for this total. And this is what happened. This is the perceived stress scale, been used in several thousand studies. You can see the pre-scores, the kind of navy blue is the norms for women. The green is the norms for men. And you can see the providers who are 85% women were obviously near the top of the PSS scale. And then you see 6 weeks later after the program, they're actually doing better than the average woman in terms of perceived stress. They're down to where men are normally. And this is a different scale. We use the exercise-induced feeling inventory used in many studies. They said at 6 weeks they were still revitalized. They were obviously a lot better right at the end of 3 days, but the important thing is how are they later? Much more calm, much more energetic, and much more engaged in their work. A yoga teacher named Gretchen Wallace, who's been working in Rwanda for survivors of the genocide there with yoga breathing, but on a one-on-one level, wanted to learn how to use it, and she had some coaching from me, took it to Haiti several times. The first time she had dramatic results with 50 women. When she came back a month later, those 50 women brought 30 other women. And this is her working with the women and the children close to her. There are men on the outside, and she's using a church bell to time their breathing at 5 breaths per minute. and these are children doing a Qigong energy ball, and then doing breathing, and they haven't slept for a week, they start doing the breathing. The breathing speed has to be altered for kids because of their size, just as people over 6 feet have to slow down their breathing, kids do faster breathing. This has to do with Venus return. And a friend of mine who took just a very little training with me, who's been working in South Sudan with women who were victims of slavery in the north, of captured by Islamic fundamentalists, took it to a rural clinic she funds there, and a Christian nonprofit called Christian Solidarity International buys people out of slavery, mainly women, it's 95% women, and their children, to purchase one average-looking woman, not a beautiful woman, out of slavery. It's $100,000 worth of cow, hoof, and mouth vaccine. And Ellen did a study where I taught her 3 Qigong movements and how to do this breathing. And because these people cannot count or read, we had to use visual analog scales like you do for pain to rate their symptoms of PTSD. And she had 19 women who had been doing the breathing for about, on average, about a year at this rural clinic. And there were dramatic changes in their scores over that time. And I would not even describe to you what had been done to these women. And then I worked with 600 slaves, as well as teaching those other women how to do more advanced group Qigong healing practice. And these people have walked for a week through the jungle and desert with little or no food. They have on average 5 to 7 parasites. They've been in slavery for years, sexually, physically, emotionally tortured. And this white guy, the translator, says, is going to teach you how to breathe to feel better. And they look like, huh? Okay. It's over 100 degrees and incredibly humid. And here they're kind of starting to do some breathing. Now here they're actually, this is a few minutes into it, they're smiling, they're starting to hug each other, they're laughing. And I also worked with polio victims. There are at least 50,000 polio victims in this 125 square mile area that the clinic covers. And these are the women who, at the end of a week of studying with me, they spontaneously decided they would become teachers and go through the country. And if I did 10 or 20 minutes of breathing and meditation with them, they would then spontaneously jump up and start singing and dancing. Amazing people. Because of time, I'm going to really rush through some of this. Disconnectedness is a symptom of PTSD that's commonly ignored. Loss of meaning and disconnection. And interoception is very important. You have an emotional body represented in your dorsal posterior insula. And breathing, meditation, music, drumming, movement all change the organization of the memory of the traumatic event to release it. We believe these are the pathways delineated by Bud Craig. And I won't get into the theory, but basically we're doing work with Chris Jeter on how the breathing affects GABA activity on magnetic resonance spectroscopy as well as yoga. And you can read some of our articles. And we hypothesized years ago that breathing, like the electronic vagal nerve stimulator, released oxytocin and prolactin. And there are now several studies showing, indeed, that yoga does, if it includes breathing especially. And this is a case of a friend, a therapist, who is a second-generation Holocaust survivor. And her father's almost everybody in his family except him had died in the camps, and her mother had also lost family. She did a basic workshop with me and then did a more advanced workshop. And when she did the more advanced breathing, what she said was she suddenly experienced seeing her father and her mother and their families, which she'd been shown pictures of, and she was really with them. And her breath pulled them out of the gas chambers, and they all came together and clicked together in one person. And she was relieved of all the stress she'd had from hearing about this growing up. And another person, I could give you many stories. This is a friend who's allowed us to use her name. She was the second woman certified to fly the U-2 spy plane. She's an amazing person and pilot. And she was supposed to be on flight 93 on September 11th, 2001, but her flight was delayed, and a friend of hers from the Air Force Academy was flying the plane, and when the terrorists brought it down, he was killed. She developed severe PTSD at that time and survivor guilt and was totally disconnected. And basically, she went on to try to do all kinds. She was an embedded journalist in Iraq for 3 years in combat, and she did post-Katrina work in Mississippi. None of that helped have a meaning to life. At 40, she decided to go to medical school to become a doctor. She thought that would give her life meaning. She started studying pre-med courses in New York and realized she wasn't absorbing anything. And a friend of hers said, well, this guy, Dr. Brown, does this course in breathing. Maybe you'd study better. I hear it makes people smarter. A lot of famous musicians do the breathing because their playing improves immediately. And she came and she was transformed the first day. And she basically had this unification experience with the universe and with people. And she finished medical school. Well, she's finishing medical school now. The first 2 years, she taught a lot of breathing to the other medical students. What are you reading? An article in Healthy Living magazine. What's it about? Breathing. So are they for it or against it? Okay. So we also work a lot with other healers, and I use techniques from Master Robert Peng, amazing healing techniques, often to heal many hundreds of people at a time. And we didn't show you our data on the inflammatory bowel because of time, but basically patients got dramatically better after 3 months compared to the control group that got intense doctor education time. And their bowels on colonoscopy, if they did what I told them to do typically, totally became normal. They got off their drugs. They're very happy people. Okay. Again, a bunch of reading.